This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to AM. I'm Kim Landers. On the program today, a major Australian defence company subject to an extortion attempt. More problems revealed with the Lion Air jet that later crashed into the sea off Indonesia, killing all on board. And our contribution to a $5 billion project to sequence the genomes of everything on Earth.
This big project will really catalogue all of life for us, and it'll really help us to better understand our local biodiversity, and it'll help us better manage and conserve our native species.
But first, as the Australian men's cricket team prepares for its first international match at home this summer, the man at the helm of the game in this country has resigned. David Peaver has walked away as chairman of Cricket Australia just days before the one-day match against South Africa in Perth. It comes after a report exposed the failings in the organisation which helped to contribute to the Cape Town ball tampering scandal. Eliza Borello reports.
A world away from Cricket Australia's Victorian boardroom, the Australian cricket team was at the Wacker in Perth facing the bowling attack of the Gosnells under-17s district side when news of David Peaver's resignation broke. 16-year-old Cameron Zawatski is Gosnells' opening bowler.
Yeah, it was pretty good experience. Something not life-changing, but good life experience.
His teammate, Akhil Wahid, says out in the middle, the Australian side was happy to chat.
Yeah, they're pretty friendly. They were good at giving advice as well. Good criticism, positive criticism. Yeah, very helpful.
What were the tips they gave you?
Just where to put it, field settings, yeah, all that.
The teenagers were aware Cricket Australia's chairman, David Peaver, had stepped down and say they just want the team to play good cricket. Cameron Sawatsky again.
I think it's something that Cricket Australia needs to get moved past quickly and get on with the future.
Up in the grandstand, the West Australian Cricket Association's chief executive, Christina Matthews, has been watching on. 7 months ago, she had the uncomfortable task of accompanying Cameron Bancroft to the media conference here where he apologised for his role in the ball tampering affair. She doesn't think the bans imposed on him, Dave Warner and Steve Smith should be lifted early, but says the team has turned a corner.
That's no surprise with Justin Langer as the coach. He's someone who likes to bring people together, teach them about engaging and not taking the game for granted.
Last week, the state associations were forced to ratify David Peaver's reappointment as Cricket Australia's chairman before seeing a damning review commissioned in the wake of the ball tampering scandal. Christina Matthews says he's made the right decision in resigning and believes a suitable replacement should be able to be found within the organisation's board.
You do need some history in a chair, so it may be they get someone on with a view to that person being chair in the future, but I think in the short term it would need to come from within the current board.
The Australian newspaper's senior cricket writer Gideon Haig tips Cricket Australia board member Jackie Hay could take the reins despite strong lobbying for former Test captain Mark Taylor to get the top job.
She appeared with David Peaver on Monday with the presentation of the Culture Review, and she cut a far more impressive figure.
Former Australian bowler Nathan Bracken says the Cultural Review handed down on Monday rings true for him personally.
But I know when I met my wife that she said, yeah, that I had an arrogance about me.
He says the organisation does need change at the top and, like Christina Matthews, is pleased David Peaver has resigned.
The only people that have in any way been punished for any of it is actually the players. And it sort of seems that everybody from CA has just walked away or stepped away from that role and will walk off and pick up another role somewhere else.
Nathan Bracken is also hopeful Cricket Australia's new chief executive, Kevin Roberts, can repair the game's image.
Because it's a game I love and I love dearly, and you don't want to see something you love put in this light and showing up.
Former Australian cricketer Nathan Bracken ending Eliza Borello's report. And a short time ago, I spoke with ABC cricket commentator Jim Maxwell. Jim Maxwell, good morning.
Good morning, Kim.
Earlier this week, David Peaver was insisting he had no intention of resigning. Now that he's gone, does that satisfy the need for some accountability at the very top of Cricket Australia?
Partially. I think this board is still tarnished, because they got the cue some months ago when Bob Everu resigned from his role as a director on the Australian Cricket Board and citing some dissatisfaction with the performance of the chairman, and he doubted whether he should be re-elected. Now, that was 6 months ago. So I would have thought that they had a pretty good idea, the rest of the board, that Peaver's probably not their man. And the fact that he was able to get re-elected before presenting this review to all the other state directors to use that expression, has peeved a number of people, including, I think, John Knox, the chairman of New South Wales, who apparently was on the phone to Peaver suggesting that his position was no longer tenable as chairman after the press conference and then the interview on the 7:30 report the other night, where clearly there was no accountability from those who run the game following this review.
Given that the board just re-elected David Peaver just last week, is their judgment now under question? Does the rest of the board have to go?
Well, that would be serious turmoil in the game if that were to occur. But there would be some who think that it is time to overhaul the whole board given what has occurred. I would have thought in the interim, now that Mark Taylor's said that he won't put up his hand for that job, it's a big opportunity if they're going to stick with someone who is on the board to go for Jackie Hay, who's a non-executive director at Qantas, amongst other things, and has a lot of experience in business and with the board. So that may be the way out, at least in the near term, because they need to have a better quality of leadership in the situation we're now in with the cricket season about to start.
You mentioned Mark Taylor. He's ruled himself out of replacing David Peaver. But would you like to eventually see an ex-player rather than a business person take the helm?
Well, if they could get someone of the clout and presence of Sir Donald Bradman, of course, who was famously the chairman of the board and a very effective one at the time, yes. But I'm not sure where they're going to go. It's a difficult situation. Here we've got an organisation that is not really a corporation, although they behave like one at times. They are running a game, so they have a duty of care to everyone who loves the game of cricket, who plays the game, and you'd have to say that they haven't handled that very well in recent times. You only have to go back to the pay negotiations and that relationship between the board and the ACA and how badly that was managed to see that they're not always communicating as well as they should with the people that matter.
The men's team is about to take on South Africa in a one-day series getting underway in Perth on the weekend. How much pressure is going to be on them as they face the home crowds this summer after all this upheaval?
Well, there's going to be a lot of pressure without the distraction of what's going on in Jolimont. The Australian team is not settled. It has a new captain for the one-day series leading up towards the World Cup next year with Aaron Finch taking over. So there's a fair bit of work to be done to get Australia into the groove of playing better cricket, given that they're the defending champions in the World Cup and they're now back to number 6 in the rankings and number 5 in the test rankings. So Australia is in an invidious position in many ways because there's so much expectation with the Australian team, certainly when they're playing at home, that they will play the kind of cricket that we'll enjoy watching, but they'll also, to go back to an old line from Cricket Australia, win. Not win at all costs, but win more than they lose. And the Australians like to see their team doing well. So it's going to be a very challenging summer with India in the test matches in particular.
ABC cricket commentator Jim Maxwell. It's been revealed that another pilot reported problems with a Lion Air jet that later crashed into the sea off Indonesia, killing all 189 people on board. The pilot on the earlier flight requested permission to turn back after takeoff because of technical problems. Here's Indonesia correspondent Anne Barker.
Passengers on flight JT43 on Sunday from Bali to Jakarta are lucky to be alive. One of the pilots on board has since revealed he made an urgent request to turn back to Bali minutes after takeoff because of technical problems, but he managed to resolve the problems and continue on to Jakarta. Barely 8 hours later, the same 737 MAX 8 aircraft plunged into the sea after a different pilot also reported technical problems and asked to return to Jakarta. An airport official, Herson, in Bali, has told the Reuters news agency how the pilot on Sunday updated the control tower to say the plane was now flying normally and he no longer needed to return to the Bali airport.
The captain himself was confident enough to fly from Jakarta to Denpasar.
The pilot of another plane coming in to land in Bali has also told how he was ordered to circle above the airport and overheard the Lion Air pilot making a pan-pan call, as it's known, which is one step down from a Mayday alert.
Because of the pan-pan call, we were told to hold off. The Lion plane requested to return back to Bali 5 minutes after takeoff. But then the pilot said the problem had been resolved and he was going ahead to Jakarta.
But the pilots kept the plane at a lower than usual altitude and passengers later complained that the flight was like a roller coaster ride. One man, Dia Madani, said the seatbelt sign was never turned off.
When the plane took off, it climbed and then went down. It rose again and then dropped again, violently shaking. Everyone in the plane shouted, Allahu Akbar, Subhanallah. We recited every prayer we knew.
The airport official Herson says the Bali flight had a speed and altimeter problem, but the captain was eventually confident the plane was airworthy and pressed on.
He double-checked to ensure that they could fly.
The plane landed in Jakarta shortly before 11 p.m, where Lion Air says the technical issues were checked and resolved and the plane was declared safe to fly. Less than 8 hours later, it plunged into the sea after another pilot had requested permission to return to base. Lion Air has declined to comment on the claims, citing the ongoing crash investigation, though it maintains the technical issues in the Bali flight were resolved according to procedure. Indonesia's transport minister has suspended the airline's technical director on the grounds he had ultimate responsibility for the plane's safety. Navy divers yesterday recovered the plane's flight data recorder from the sea floor, giving hope that investigators will soon have a better picture of what happened, not only on Monday, but also during the flight from Bali. This is Anne Barker in Jakarta for AM.
And you're listening to AM, where it's 12 minutes past 8. A cyber attack and extortion attempt has forced major Australian defence shipbuilder Austal to increase its data security. An unknown offender hacked Austal, accessing design drawings and the personal contact details of some staff members. The Federal Police and the Cyber Security Centre are investigating as this incident adds to a growing list of malicious attacks that authorities are dealing with. Political reporter Melissa Clark joins us now from Parliament House in Canberra. Melissa, do we know who hacked into Austal and what they managed to get?
Well, it's not clear who. All we know is that it's an unknown offender, according to the company. But we do know that whoever it was managed to penetrate Austal's data systems in Australia. Now, Austal builds frigates and patrol boats for the Australian Navy and builds and maintains aluminium ships all around the world, including combat ships for the US Navy. Now, whoever this unknown offender is managed to get information about staff emails and phone numbers, but more crucially, managed to access ship building designs too. And it seems they attempted to either sell the designs or extort Austal for the fact that they had accessed them. Now, Austal has indicated that the drawings were designs for customers and subcontractors and insists that there was no commercially sensitive information involved, nor were there any details that affect national security. And that has been confirmed by the Australian Defence Department as well.
Now, cyber attacks are becoming increasingly common. How concerned are the Australian authorities that someone managed to hack into a critical company working in the defence sector?
Well, they're very concerned. The Australian Federal Police are investigating, as is the Australian Cyber Security Centre, which is run by the Australian Signals Directorate, which is sort of the premier cyber and communications intelligence authority in Australia. Now, they have stepped in to help Austal directly with its cyber defences. They all say that only Austal's Australian operations were affected, not its American operations and its other international counterparts. But that would be of concern to our international partners as well, given this space, this defence space, is such a sensitive one. Now, the Department of Defence and the Department of Home Affairs say that this incident really reinforces how serious cybersecurity threats are, particularly in the defence industry, and the need for companies working in this space to make sure that the defences they have, their counter cyber espionage defences, are adequate in this. Now, the head of the Australian Security and Intelligence Organisation, Duncan Lewis, has been saying for some time now that espionage and foreign interference is at unprecedented levels in Australia, and we're seeing this, the Australian Signals Directorate take a much more prominent role in working directly with businesses. That's becoming a higher priority for the Australian government in recognition of not only the growing threat to commercial operations, but also because there are now so many private companies involved in constructing and in operating public infrastructure.
That's our political reporter, Melissa Clark in Canberra. Thank you. Well, water authorities are in overdrive trying to restore public confidence not only in themselves, but the Murray-Darling Basin Plan too. They're proposing new water-saving projects in New South Wales, which they believe could have significant environmental benefits for the whole basin. But locals worry it could destroy the Darling River and the communities it supports. Here's Penny Timms from the ABC's Specialist Reporting Team.
The Darling River runs through Rachel Strawn's sheep, citrus and wine grape farm just outside of Pooncarie in southwest New South Wales. It's been in her husband's family for generations.
This water, it's about 3 metres less than what they're anticipating they would get into this section.
The river is so low that the New South Wales government has installed a block bank further downstream, trapping water to ensure properties like hers have it over summer. The river could stop flowing by December.
We're really scared that coming into the heat of summer that there's not going to be enough to get through the season.
Signs already line the Darling River warning that the water could be toxic. Rather than drought, Rachel Strawn blames government policy. Her property supports three families, but as the water becomes less viable, that could change.
The decision that the government's making, it's going to be able to only support possibly one family, and who do you ask to leave? Like, which brother has to go and at what cost?
Water authorities have staged a series of meetings this week explaining their proposals for Menindee Lakes and the Lower Darling. They hope it will fix the water situation. Rachel Connell is the Executive Director of Infrastructure New South Wales.
The overall objective of the Menindee Lakes Water Saving Project is to save water through reducing evaporative losses. On average, about 400 gigalitres of water is lost every year through evaporation to the Menindee Lakes. One of the options that has been put forward is to look at managing the lakes in a way that reduces those losses.
The proposal would cut evaporation by reducing surface water. Part of the plan would also draw down water from Lake Menindee faster and at a higher volume when the lake is full. It also means that the Darling River downstream could stop flowing more often. To counter that, a second project would have to provide water to communities between Menindee and Wentworth, with six options being considered, including a new pipeline to be used when the water turns bad. Locals say they just need a healthy river.
We need it to survive. It's basic. I bet you can't survive without it. You brought water with you. That's bad when people that live on the river have to buy water to survive.
There's no integrity in what these people say. That's the problem. We've just got false science.
Can you tell me how having a dry riverbed, say 4 out of 5 years, is going to avoid local impacts on tourism, on pastoral properties, on irrigated properties?
And there are other possible consequences. The project site is home to almost 450 registered sacred sites. Barkindji elder Badger Bates says the project area is covered by native title.
What's the good of having land without water? They might just take everything if they want to be so greedy, you know?
And he fears for the future generations.
It's going to destroy the kids' future. Our future is the kids. Our grandkids, doesn't matter what colour they are, if we don't fight and protect this, everything's finished. The kids got no future.
The Department of Infrastructure says the projects aren't set in stone and it's considering all feedback. If the projects don't happen, water savings will still need to be made elsewhere, likely from buybacks around Griffith or Deniliquin.
Penny Timms reporting. As the months tick down to Britain's exit from the European Union, there are allegations that illicit funds bankrolled the pro-Brexit campaign. Aaron Banks, one of the UK's biggest political donors, is being investigated by the National Crime Agency over an £8 million loan he gave to the Leave campaign. Europe correspondent Samantha Hawley reports.
Aaron Banks ran the unofficial Leave.eu campaign. Now he's being investigated for alleged criminal offences in the lead-up to the Brexit referendum in 2016. The National Crime Agency says it suspects Mr. Banks was not the true source of loans to the campaign, which it says had come from impermissible overseas donors. Stephen Kinnock is a Labour MP.
I've been calling for this since the spring of 2017, along with a number of other colleagues, and I think we feel vindicated today that our request for a full investigation has been listened to. I think it's very good that it's been passed to the National Crime Agency. They've got the forensic capability to make this happen. And Mr. Banks has serious questions to answer. He is the biggest donor in British political history.
Aaron Banks contributed millions of pounds to support the campaign for Britain to leave the EU. But he says he never received any funds from overseas, and in the past he's denied any links to Russia. The chief executive of his company, Leave.eu, Liz Bliney, says the investigation is welcome.
I welcome the matter being passed on to the National Crime Agency, because to date, all we've seen from the Electoral Commission is a biased approach. I hope that the matter will be shortly concluded to demonstrate that no crimes have been committed.
Mr. Banks says the Electoral Commission that referred the case to authorities is under intense political pressure from those against Brexit. Damien Collins is a Conservative MP and the head of a parliamentary committee that has previously questioned the businessman.
The Select Committee reports that we published this summer said that if it wasn't clear what the source of Aaron Banks' wealth was for the donations he made to Leave.eu, then this should be referred to the National Crime Agency. Clearly, the Electoral Commission have come to the same conclusion. They have the same concerns we had, and it's now been referred. The NCA should now use all of their powers to investigate this fully. These are very serious matters, and part of that investigation, I think, has to bring to a conclusion our understanding of what the real source of Aaron Banks' wealth was that led him to make these donations.
Under UK laws, loans and donations to campaigners cannot come from overseas sources. Some Remain supporters say Brexit should be put on hold until the inquiry is complete. This is Samantha Hawley in London reporting for AM.
More than 1,000 Google employees around the world are staging unprecedented walkouts to protest against the tech giant's treatment of women. They're demanding changes to the way the company handles allegations of sexual misconduct, racism, and unchecked executive power. Google's chief executive says he is committed to making a change. Hagar Cohen reports.
The series of protests, which started in Singapore, have now spread worldwide. Employees from New York, LA, Zurich, London, Dublin, Tokyo, and Berlin all walked out. Many have taken to social media using the Twitter handle at Google Walkout to express their concerns.
Support women and to protest the way that this company has handled sexual harassment cases.
Protesters outside the Google headquarters in New York said key changes to the company's treatment of women are long overdue.
It's protesting the handling of sexual harassment cases by upper management. I think social responsibility is really important this time for tech companies.
Other protesters hope the walkout will bring about the level of attention it requires and lead to real change.
It means that people are just, you know, becoming more strong and more united, and, you know, they're not going to be tolerant for just any type of behavior and being treated less than.
A statement by the organizers of the walkouts issued last night and published on Twitter lists five key demands: an end to forced arbitration in cases of harassment and discrimination, a commitment to end pay inequality, a public report on sexual harassment cases within the company, a better process for reporting sexual misconduct, and the appointment of an employee representative to the board. The walkouts come only days after revelations in the US press that the tech giant had suppressed allegations of sexual misconduct levelled against several of its top executives. In one case, Andy Rubin, a senior executive, was reportedly given a $90 million payout when he left the company after a sexual misconduct investigation found some of the allegations credible. The executive, Andy Rubin, has denied the allegations. In London, a male employee said he's protesting to ensure the company stops protecting alleged perpetrators of workplace harassment.
I'm walking out along with other colleagues in support of anyone in any workplace who has been harassed and to ensure that perpetrators are not protected and not rewarded.
Google's chief executive, Sundar Pichai, has emailed staff and expressed his support of their right to protest. Mr. Pichai also apologised for the company's past actions. However, he didn't name any specific cases.
I understand the anger and disappointment that many of you feel. I feel it as well, and I am fully committed to making progress on an issue that has persisted for far too long in our society. And yes, here at Google too.
It's the latest in a series of protests by global tech employees who are increasingly concerned about their company's ethics. Only 26% of Google's executive are women. In the past few years, Google has also been sued by former employees who claimed the company underpaid women. Google denies it has a gender pay gap problem.
Hagar Cohen reporting. It's the world's most ambitious conservation project, a $5 billion bid to sequence the genomes of every animal and plant on Earth. Australia's contribution is to crack the DNA codes of 50 of our most endangered species over the next 5 years, as Eleanor Whitehead reports.
There are only 12 orange-bellied parrots left in Australia's wild. But it's just one species that could benefit from the Earth Biogenome Project. It's an international initiative to map the genetic code of every living organism on Earth.
It's a consortium of researchers coming together from all over the world to sequence all of life on Earth, all plants, animals and fungi.
Kathy Belov is a professor at the University of Sydney and is working on the project. To meet its goal, it will have to sequence the genomes of 1.5 million species over the next 10 years. That's compared to 3,500 which have already been decoded. Doing that will cost almost $5 billion. But Kathy Belov says that's a small price to pay.
This big project will really catalogue all of life for us, and it'll really help us to better understand our local biodiversity, and it'll help us better manage and conserve our native species, as well as finding opportunities for identifying novel biomedical molecules, for instance. So the scope for this project is massive.
It's been just months since Australian scientists established the koala's genetic blueprint. As part of this project, they'll do the same for 50 of its most endangered species over the next 5 years. First up are the bilby and the orange-bellied parrot.
We've got a lot to do. We thought 50 was a tackleable number. We'll be working with the Department of Environment, with the state government agencies, and also with the zoos and the wildlife sanctuaries to really prioritise those 50 species so that we can better understand their biology.
Kathy Belov is leading Australia's push, which is called the 50 in 5 initiative. She hopes that findings about evolution, genetic diversity and immunity will help to save some of those species.
I think Australia really needs to step up in this effort. We actually have the worst record of mammalian extinctions in the world, which is quite shocking. So since European settlement, we've lost 34 mammals. And to put that into context, 1 in 3 mammalian extinctions that have occurred in the past 400 years have occurred in Australia. So I think it really is our responsibility to be better conserving our native species.
But while Australia fares badly on conservation, a report this week from the World Wildlife Fund painted a bleak picture internationally.
What we found was a 60% collapse in wildlife populations just in those 44 years from 1970 to 2014. That's all wildlife. This isn't just threatened wildlife. And so when you look at that, that's the global average. So you've got to realise, well, there's many species that are threatened species that are declining a lot faster than that.
Martin Taylor is WWF Australia's conservation science manager, and he says human consumption may be causing a mass extinction.
There's a detectable upward tick in an extinction rate, and certainly that's raised the spectre that we're at the beginning stages of the sixth mass extinction, as it's called. This time, the mass extinction is down to us.
With better genetic information, some of those losses may be averted.
Eleanor Whitehead. Checking finance now, and Wall Street has ended higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has closed up more than 1%. The Australian dollar is sharply higher at just over 72 US cents. And that is AM for today. AM's executive producer is Michael Edwards. The associate producer is Barney Porter. Political producer Claudia Long. Technical production by Mariam Zahr and Kem White. Digital production by Mariella Attard. And web publishing by Matthew Bates and Eugene Young. I'm Kim Landers. Sabra Lane will be back again on Monday. Have a great weekend. It's 8:30.